These are indicators of how much things have changed.
And on that note, I thank both of you for being with me on this spotlight. Glenn Dyson, professor of political science, University of Southeastern Norway, out of Oslo, and Rick Sterling, investigative journalist, out of Berkeley. And thank you for being with us on another Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashemi, signing off for myself and all the group right here in Tehran. Goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Here we enlighten you with ayahs 261 and 262 from the Surah Baqarah, recited by Ali Parhiskar.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. Mathalul ladhina yunfiquna amwalahum fi sabilillahi kamathali habbatin anbatat sab'a sanabil kamathali habbatin anbatat سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة مئة حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most compassionate. The parable of those who spend their property in the way of Allah is as the parable of a grain growing 7 years, with 100 grains in every ear. And Allah multiplies for whom He pleases, and Allah is ample giving, knowing. As for those who spend their property in the way of Allah, then do not follow what they have spent with reproach or injury. They shall have their reward from their Lord, and they shall have no fear, nor shall they grieve.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
UN experts condemn Israel for targeting civilians seeking humanitarian aid in Gaza, saying the regime is intentionally starving Palestinian people. Pro-Palestine rights advocacy groups file lawsuit against the Canadian government for allowing companies to export military equipment and technology to Israel. And the Yemeni army targets 2 American warships in the Red Sea with missiles and drones in response to acts of aggression by the US and the UK. Hello everyone, thank you for joining us here on World News. As Israel's genocidal war on Gaza enters its 6th month, more civilians fall victim to regime's ongoing airstrikes on the besieged territory. Now, starting with the north, where an Israeli bombing of the Al-Zaytun neighborhood of Gaza City has left 2 Palestinians dead and several injured. Cities witnessed also another attack on Palestinians queuing for aid deliveries, leaving several of them seriously injured. In central Gaza, 6 civilians, including a journalist working for the Al-Aqsa Channel, were killed in Israeli bombardment in Deir al-Balah. Number of journalists killed now since the start of Israel's genocidal war stands at 133. To the south, reports say Israel has cut internet access in large areas of Rafah. Now, the total death toll from the Israeli onslaught on Gaza since October 7th has now surpassed 30,600, the majority of them women and children. And our Gaza correspondent, Moti Abu Musabe, joined us earlier on the ground there in the city of Deir al-Balah for an update.
The Israeli airstrikes and attacks continued over the last couple of hours. Let's begin from Khan Yunis city, as the Israeli warplanes targeted and destroyed more residential buildings, particularly in the eastern part of Khan Yunis city and Abasan neighborhood, the neighborhood that was subjected to heavy bombardments and intense Israeli artillery shelling over the last couple of hours. In the meantime, at least 23 Palestinian dead bodies were extracted over the last couple of hours from the same area, left behind the continuous and the chronic Israeli airstrikes and attacks that reached the residential monumental buildings and houses over that area. Here in the central area of Gaza Strip, the Israeli warplanes targeted at least two residential buildings in an Nusayrat refugee camp over the last couple of hours. Dozens of the Palestinian civilians were reportedly injured and they were brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital here. In addition to that, here in Deir al-Balah City, the Israeli warplanes attacked another group of the Palestinian civilians in the western part of the city. They were also brought to the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital. Where in Gaza City, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling at the southern parts of the city, particularly and even as the Zaytun neighborhood. It was targeted repeatedly and frequently by the Israeli artillery shelling.
UN rights experts accuse Israel of intentionally starving Palestinians in Gaza. They say regime attacks humanitarian convoys and civilians that are seeking such aid. UN experts said Israel has opened fire on humanitarian aid convoys on several occasions, despite the fact those convoys share their coordinates with the regime. The report also mentions Israel is intercepting deliveries at checkpoints, bombing humanitarian convoys, and shooting at civilians that are seeking assistance. On February 29th, Israel fired on crowds of Palestinians at an aid center in Gaza City, leaving 112 people dead and hundreds injured. The experts called on Tel Aviv to end its campaign of starvation and targeting of civilians. Meanwhile, a senior UN official says the international community must flood Gaza with aid in order to avert further loss of life from starvation in the blockaded territory.
Now, when children starting, as the doctors are telling our colleagues, to die from starvation, that should be an alarm like no other. If not now, when is the time to pull the stops, break the glass, flood Gaza with the aid that it needs? So that is what we need to see happen.
The remarks come as international organizations continue expressing growing concerns over the high levels of malnutrition in Gaza. The WHO says that in northern Gaza, 1 in 6 children under the age of 2 are acutely malnourished. UNICEF also warned about extremely high malnutrition rates for children under the age of 5. Meanwhile, the UN Food Agency says it's paused its aid deliveries to the war-torn strip since the 20th of February. The World Food Program said decisions due to continuous return of its food convoys by the Israeli regime from the north, which is literally on the brink of complete famine. Pro-Palestinian advocacy groups in Canada filed a lawsuit against the government for allowing companies to export military equipment and technology to Israel. Lawsuits been filed by the Canadian Lawyers for International Human Rights Group and the Palestinian Al-Haq organization and 4 individuals. It says Canadian law bans the military exports to Israel because there is substantial risk they could be used to violate international law and commit crimes against women and children. Since the start of Israel's genocidal campaign, Canada has authorized at least $21 million worth of new permits for military exports to the regime. U.S. and the Netherlands are also facing similar lawsuits over Israel's onslaught on Gaza. Last month, the Dutch court ordered the government to block all exports of F-35 fighter jet parts to Tel Aviv. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's launched a new attack against Israeli targets in occupied territories in support of Gazans. The Iraqi resistance says it targeted the power station at Israel's Haifa airport using drones, adding operation was carried out in response to the Israeli massacre of Palestinian civilians, including women and children in Gaza. Now, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has carried out a number of attacks against Israeli targets. Last week, group launched a drone attack on a chemical facility in Haifa as well. Resistance group has also struck major American military bases in Iraq and Syria amid anger over Washington's support for Israel's genocide in Gaza. Meanwhile, the Yemeni army says it's carried out fresh operations against U.S. targets in the Red Sea. In a statement, the Yemeni armed forces say they targeted 2 American warships with drones and missiles. The statement also said attacks were in response to earlier airstrikes by the U.S. and U.K. against Yemen. and also in solidarity with Palestinians. Yemeni forces have targeted over 24 Israeli-linked vessels in the Red Sea since the beginning of Israel's genocidal war. Asana says its operations will continue until the regime stops its onslaught and ends its siege on Palestine.
After days of pause in Yemen's naval operations, the spokesman for the Yemeni army announced the successful targeting of an Israeli ship in the Arabian Sea with multiple missiles. He said that the attack followed the drone and missile strikes against U.S. warships in the Red Sea.
The naval forces of the Yemeni armed forces launched an attack on the Israeli ship MSC Sky sailing in the Arabian Sea with a number of appropriate naval missiles. The missiles hit the vessel in an accurate and direct manner. The operation came only hours after Yemen's armed forces targeted a number of enemy American warships in the Red Sea with a number of ballistic missiles and drones.
Experts say this operation sends a message to the US and UK that Yemen's armed forces are still capable of targeting Israeli-bound vessels in the regional waters. Despite their aggression against Yemen, they believe that the Yemeni army has not used its new weapons yet, which will be another challenge for the Western powers.
Yes, there's operations and the targeting of the Israeli ship and the American warships is a message that the Yemeni armed forces will continue their operations against the enemy. No matter what the Americans do, whether political or military moves, we will continue with our strategic options until the aggression against our brothers in Gaza stops. The Yemeni army will carry out more strikes and still has big surprises for the enemy in the coming days, unless the enemy stops the brutal aggression against Gaza.
On Saturday, the British cargo ship Ruby Mar, which had been targeted by the Yemeni army last month, sank in the Red Sea. The sinking of the Ruby Mar has raised concerns about the potential ecological damage to the Red Sea and its coral reefs, as it was carrying more than 41 tons of fertilizer and had leaked oil for several days after the attack.
Yemeni officials hold the US and UK fully responsible for any pollution resulting from the sinking of the British ship. They assert that Washington is the one militarizing the Red Sea, supporting the Israeli war on Gaza and depriving Palestinians of humanitarian aid, which are the main reasons for Yemeni naval operations. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Now, British politician and lawmaker George Galloway has warned about the current state of the United Kingdom, saying country is at a very dangerous time in its history.
I think that we stand at a very dangerous crossroads in our country's affairs, perhaps as dangerous as any since the summer and autumn of 1940-41. And there's no Mr. Churchill in this picture. There's no one, it seems, able to step forward and steady the ship of state and begin to rally, unite our people to face what is a very difficult future. Poverty stalks the land, child poverty in particular.
Galloway made the comments after being sworn in as MP following his by-election victory in Rochdale. He ran a campaign focused on stopping Israel's onslaught on Gaza. The UK's political scene's undergoing profound changes marked by legal disputes and a significant decline in public support for the ruling Conservative Party. A recent Ipsos poll shows support for the Conservatives, who've been in power for more than 14 years, was at just 20% at the beginning of March. And the UK government ministers are considering the expansion of the definition of extremism and banning members of parliament from engaging with protest groups, among them pro-Palestine march organizers. Human rights campaigners, though, say the move is an insult to democracy, as Saeed Puriza reports.
The right to speak out, to protest, the very fabric of democratic rights, once again under attack in the UK, as the government updates its definition of extremism and is about to introduce a potential ban on parliamentarians joining protests. Recommendations from the government's advisor on political violence, John Woodcock, also known as Lord Walney, who is a former chair of Labour Friends of Israel, call on leaders of the mainstream political parties to instruct their MPs to employ a zero-tolerance approach to groups that use disruptive tactics or fail to stop, quote, hate on marches. In the crosshairs, climate activist groups such as Extinction Rebellion and Palestine Solidarity Campaign, who have organized the enormous peaceful mobilizations for Gaza since October last year. Ahead of Walney's recommendations, and after the by-election in Rochdale, Greater Manchester, that handed pro-Palestine campaigner George Galloway a thumping victory, a speech by the Prime Minister vilifying the pro-Palestinian protests demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. Critics say comments like those about peaceful demonstrations are a threat to the long tradition of freedom of protest and expression in the country.
His assertions are totally false. I mean, you know, the claims of an increase in anti-Semitism, of extremism, there is no evidence for that. I mean, this is just pure invention and another indication, frankly, of how weak this government really is. To have a special address to the nation as if there was some sort of state of emergency. Some people that spoke to me thought that we'd declared war on Russia. What it was George Galloway, the leader of the Workers' Party, getting elected as a Member of Parliament. I mean, that should be celebrated, not attacked in that way. It's just absolutely ridiculous.
The new changes are yet to be announced and legislated, but the political temperature is rapidly rising in the UK.
In its 2024 World Report, Human Rights Watch says that the UK government's practices and policies have severely curtailed domestic human rights protections. Others say the country is at risk of turning into a police state masquerading as a democracy. The question now is, how deep will those erosions go? And will the MPs in the building behind me allow them to continue? Saidpour is up, London.
Iran's Al-Alam Arabic News Network once again gets targeted by censorship on Western social media platforms. Social networks such as X, YouTube, and Instagram have taken down all Al-Alam accounts. YouTube deleted network's channel on Google without explanation, contrary to its usual procedure of sending a warning and then giving you the possibility of protesting through email. And this is not the first time Al-Alam's social media pages have been blocked. Back in 2020, Facebook also removed the channel's verified page with over 7 million followers. Al-Alam has been at the forefront of reporting Israeli crimes against the people of Gaza. Iranians mark a National Tree Planting Day. Every year, just before Iranian New Year, millions of people in the country plant trees to promote greenery development and welcome the beginning of spring. Farzan Ashuriyun reports from Tehran.
Planting trees is one of the important actions in preserving the natural resources, enriching forests, creating forest parks in order to preserve the environment. March 5th marks Arbor Day or National Tree Planting Day in Iran. On this day, which is celebrated to promote the development and preservation of greenery across the country, Iranians plant trees or saplings and encourage others to do so. In December, the Iranian government announced the launch of a project to plant 1 billion trees across the country in 4 years' time. According to officials, the project, which can significantly lead to preserving the environment, is in accordance with international treaties. The goals of the 1 billion tree planting project in Iran include revitalizing natural jungles, increasing urban green space, and countering sandstorms, as the country's climate is mainly arid. Planting these trees can also affect the neighboring countries. More than 30 million seedlings and seeds have been planted in the whole country in the last 3 months. In addition, 116 million seedlings have been produced in the public sector and 121 million seedlings in the private sector. Farzan Ashuriyun, Tehran.
And that's it for your latest, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on World News.
the whole world is silent towards oppression, even one voice becomes powerful. IRIB English Radio, the voice of the voiceless. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
Supplication on Wednesdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who appointed the night to be a garment, and sleep for a rest, and day He appointed for a rising. To Thee belongs praise, for Thou roused me from my sleep. And hadst Thou willed, Thou wouldst have made it everlasting, an everlasting praise that will never be cut off, and whose number the creatures will never count. O Allah, to Thee belongs praise, for Thou created, then proportioned, and ordained and decreed, and gave death and bestowed life, and made sick and healed, and made well and afflicted, and sat upon the throne and encompassed the kingdom. I supplicate thee with the supplication of one whose mediation is weak, whose stratagems have been cut off, whose term has drawn near, whose expectation from this world has shrunk, whose neediness for thy mercy has intensified, whose remorse for his neglect has become great, whose slips and stumbles have become many, and whose repentance is devoted sincerely to thy face. So bless Muhammad, the seal of the prophets, and his household, the good, the pure. And provide me with the intercessions of Muhammad, Allah bless him and his household, and deprive me not of his companionship. Surely thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, decree for me on Wednesday four things. Induce me to be strong in obedience to Thee, to be joyful in worshipping Thee, to be desirous of Thy reward, and to abstain from that which would make incumbent upon me Thy painful punishment. Thou art gentle to whom Thou wilt.
Limelight. Despite court ruling, the Zionist regime continued to kill and cause harm in Gaza, blocked aid entry, and allowed officials to incite against Palestinians. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the second part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, the court ordered the Zionist regime to take immediate measures to enable urgent basic services and humanitarian assistance into Gaza. But since the ruling, the daily average number of trucks entering the strip has fallen. Between January 1st and 26th, 147 trucks were entering daily, but that fell to 57 between February 9th and 21st. Before the war, an average of 500 trucks of food and resources entered Gaza each day. A survey of 24 aid groups operating in Gaza after the ICJ ruling found that delays and denials at Israeli crossing and inspection points was a key impediment to the deliveries. On February 20, the World Food Programme paused deliveries of life-saving food to northern Gaza due to safety and security concerns. Aid workers have said they have effectively no presence in the north, with the Zionist regime denying access to the area since the end of a temporary pause in the attacks last year. Just a day after the ICJ ruling, the Zionist regime claimed that a number of employees out of 30,000 at the UN Refugee Agency for Palestinians, UNRWA, were involved in the October 7th events. Since then, 18 countries have suspended funding to the agency. UNRWA, which is the main supplier of food, water and shelter in the enclave, has said that the Israeli regime calls for its abolition and the funding suspensions have left the agency at breaking point. Over the past month, 8 trucks have also been blocked by Zionist protesters. Israelis from across the political spectrum have been gathering at Karam Abu Salem crossing to stop the delivery of humanitarian aid. Many have set up tents in the area and blocked aid entries by lying across the ground in front of trucks. In just one day, on February 6, the Zionist protesters blocked the delivery of 138 trucks entering Gaza. 8 convoys have been attacked in Gaza too. A CNN investigation found that Israeli regime forces fired on a UN convoy in central Gaza on February 5th, before blocking its progress to northern parts of the territory. On February 27th, at least 115 Palestinians were killed after the Zionist regime forces fired on people at an aid convoy in Gaza City's Al-Rashid Street. Following the incident, the Zionist regime's National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said Israeli forces acted excellently against the Gazan mob that tried to harm them. He called on the Zionist regime to completely stop transferring aid to the enclave. The provisional measures instructed the Zionist regime to take measures to prevent and punish incitement to commit genocide against Palestinians in Gaza. During the ICJ proceedings, South Africa's legal team cited scores of examples of Israeli regime officials and military figures making extreme statements of incitement and dehumanizing language against Palestinians. On January 28, 2 days after the preliminary ruling, the Zionist regime ministers, politicians, rabbis, and public figures attended a conference in Al-Quds, calling for resettlement of Zionists in Gaza and making statements widely deemed to be genocidal. The event entitled Conference for the Victory of Israel Settlement Brings Security Returning to the Gaza Strip and Northern Samaria called for Palestinians to be expelled. It was attended by 11 cabinet ministers and 15 members of parliament. Participants presented details of proposed future settlements, maps, and stages of preparation. They made continuous reference to Gush Katif, a block of 17 illegal Zionist settlements that had previously existed in southern Gaza. National Security Minister Ben-Gvir said, "You are right. Voluntary encouragement. Let them go from here. We must return to Gush Katif and northern Samaria." If you don't want it to happen again for the 7th or 10th time, we must return home and control the territory. Following Ben-Gvir's speech, people could be heard chanting, "Death to Arabs." Hayem Katz, the Zionist regime's tourism minister, told the conference, "Today, after 18 years, we have the opportunity to stand up and build and expand the land of Israel." Daniela Weiss, the far-right former mayor of the Zionist settlement Kedumim in the occupied West Bank, called for Palestinians to be starved in order to force them into leaving Gaza. She told a reporter in the conference, "The Arabs will move. If we don't give them food, we don't give the Arabs anything, they will have to leave. The world will accept them." Since the conference, other extreme statements have been made by the Zionist officials. On February 12th, reports emerged that Ben-Gvir had urged the military to shoot women and children in Gaza who came near the occupied territory's border. Ben-Gvir was quoted as saying during a cabinet meeting, "We cannot have women and children getting close to the border. Anyone who gets near must get a bullet in his head." A day later, far-right finance minister Bezalel Smotrich said, "American pressure or fear of harming civilians should not deter us from occupying Rafah and destroying Hamas." He was speaking ahead of a planned ground invasion of the southern city. On February 19th, May Golan, the Zionist regime's minister for the advancement of women, made a speech expressing her pride in the ruins of Gaza. She told the Knesset, "I am personally proud of the ruins of Gaza, and that every baby, even 80 years from now, will tell their grandchildren what the Jews did. Not a dove, and not an olive branch, only a sword to cut off Sinwar's head."
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. Black and white.
The government that no one elected of Dina Boluarte has turned 1 year. In order to assume and carry out the coup d'etat against President Pedro Castillo, Dina Boluarte had the support of the entire mafia that has been built around Fujimori, his politics, and his daughter.
A su política, a su hija. Es por eso que ahora en diciembre.
That is why now in December, Dina Boluarte returns the favor and sets free the genocidal, the murderer, the corrupt, the coward who rushed off to Japan at a certain moment and from there resigned from the position of president. He was detained with a maximum sentence of 25 years, which is the maximum sentence in Peru. He was in jail for 16 years. And today, going beyond international agreements and international legislation to which Peru is committed, he is simply left free. The collusion between the old criminal dictatorships of Fujimori, Alberto Fujimori, and Dina Boluarte is absolute. The common identity is found in ideology, politics, and in the repression of the people. As for now, Dina Boluarte has officially murdered 80 people by the repressive forces since she assumed power without anyone electing her after the coup d'etat.
Bajo órdenes precisas y personales.
Under precise and personal orders from dictator Fujimori, 15 people from upper neighborhoods and 10 young students and teachers of Cantuta were murdered. That is why Fujimori was imprisoned and sentenced to 25 years in jail. Of course, he was set free, as we said, after 16 years. In the last 20 years in Peru, there have been 20,000 forced disappearances, mass graves were found, and there have been 5,337 summary executions.
Ejecuciones sumarias. Sumarias.
La mayoría. The vast majority during Mr. Fujimori's mandate of 10 years.
El señor Fujimori.
We're talking of this criminal who was absolutely aligned with North American imperialism, obeying all its orders. On the other hand, he has no problem with destroying entire villages in deep Peru and has no problem in handling over the country to imperialist capital. Today he returns in glory and majesty to rest at the age of 85 in his house like a grandfather who has not done any harm to anyone. But Peruvian popular social organizations are raising their voices. A genocide of these characteristics, brother in thought and practices of some like Stroessner in Paraguay, Pinochet in Chile, Videla in Argentina, he deserves nothing other than to die in prison because he had an attitude that was not only repressive, but also the murder of Peruvians was his joy.
El asesinato de los peruanos.
This is Black and White. I'm Eduardo Artes.
Soy Eduardo Artes. Hoy desde Perú estamos.
Today we're coming to you from Peru with Anay Durand, former Minister of Women and Vulnerable Populations of Peru, during the government of President Pedro Castillo.
Pedro Castillo. Ella es socióloga.
She is a sociologist and a member of the faculty of San Marco. Dear Anay, welcome to Black and White.
Thank you very much for this opportunity.
Anay, todo el mundo caracterizamos.
We all consider Fujimori's government to be a genocidal, repressive government.
Un gobierno con características
with the same characteristics as Vizcarra and Pinochet in Latin America, from an economic point of view.
¿Cuál es la ideología?
What was the ideology and policy that the dictatorship of Alberto Fujimori took?
la dictadura de Alberto Fujimori.
Bueno, el gobierno Fujimori es electo por voto popular.
Well, I must say that the Fujimori government was elected by popular vote in 1990 in the context of a severe structural crisis in Peru, like an unprecedented hyperinflation, a very bloody internal armed conflict. In the meantime, Fujimori came to power with the promise of not restoring to shock and neoliberal measures. 2 years later, in 1992, he tries to establish special relations with a part of the armed forces and business groups, and he does this with the advice of Vladimiro Montesinos. And on April 5, 1992, he closes the Congress and declares a state of emergency. It is in this emergency situation that he starts to implement the neoliberal model in the country. In terms of ideology, we must say that Fujimorism does not have a great ideology and does not belong to any great discourse, but a completely pragmatic government that tried to create a shock. In addition, the vote itself in an authoritarian government allowed the implementation of neoliberal measures and the orders from Washington. These measures included the privatization and liquidation of state-owned companies, the national airlines such as Aeropro and Minropro, and all the companies that had been created in the previous decades within the framework of a developing country's business structure. In addition, policies were adopted in favor of multinational capitals, large capitals entered the mining sector, and various industrial sectors and pension funds. The implementation of this neoliberal structure reduced the state to its minimum size and, as we said, and obviously in a context of authoritarianism that allows arbitrary actions by the state. Add to these the widespread corruption that you did not mention, something that is necessary as the characteristics of a genocidal government. This must be mentioned. Specifically in the Peru case, Fujimori was tried for corruption and mismanagement of public funds. So this is another feature of neoliberalism in Peru. There's a kind of mafia that takes advantage of the privatization of large capitals and steals the country's resources. On the other hand, another feature of Peruvian neoliberalism is the dissolution of social institutions. During this armed conflict, the leader of labor unions were killed. In this situation, the widespread division created a society without organization and without social organizations representing the people, and this reality helped neoliberalism continue its actions with much more ease. This is a summary of Fujimori's imposed economic policy. In 1993, Constitution passed the Fujimori regime. It establishes the policy, and this policy continued in the following years. In the post-Fujimori governments, elections were held in 2001, but absolutely nothing changed in relation to this economic regime. And moreover, the politics were deepened. After the increase in mineral prices, the elected governments after Fujimori deepened this neoliberal policy.
Perfecto, así es. Ahora, dime una cosa.
It is absolutely so. Now, tell me something. What is the explanation of Fujimori's freedom?
Del gobierno de la Dina Boluarte, que un gobierno que nadie la eligió.
In the first year of Dina Boluarte's government, a government that no one elected and came to power through a coup, what kind of disagreement and agreement is there that the Constitutional Court and the government body had even ignored international agreements in this field?
Inclusive de acuerdos internacionales que existen en esta materia.
Well, the amnesty of Alberto Fujimori is what his party has been seeking for years. We must note that in 2001, Fujimori left. But the problem was that the movement known as Popular Force was allowed to enter the political scene. The party led by Keiko Fujimori. When the government is not in their hands, they change the laws through Congress, which means that by obtaining a majority in Congress, they can have direct representation in the Constitutional Court. And since the past, the Constitutional Court is responsible for the interest of Fujimori. And beyond that, they're trying to form a coalition, like what we saw in 2021. where together with the extreme right parties and the persecution of the big media, they remove the legitimate and elected president and impose Dina Boluarte as the president. Dina Boluarte was brought to power by the parties that lost the elections, and in the face of the popular reaction, to maintain her position in power, she adopts the policy of killing. There are complaints about genocide. 80 Peruvians have been killed in about 13 months due to demonstrations to defend their vote. Her supporter is the Congress, and the majority forces of the Congress belong to Fujimorism, to that movement. She's a kind of borrower of Fujimorism. Her government and cabinet are made up of members of the party that lost the election, the far-right Fujimorism, and she was preparing the ground for this amnesty. Deputized Foreign Minister of Dina Boluarte, who was appointed a few months ago, is a known Fujimorist and was in favor of pardoning her. In addition, she's a serious critic of the Inter-American Court, which opposes Fujimori's amnesty. What has been done is to validate the amnesty that Pedro Pablo Kuczynski, former president of Peru, granted to Fujimori in 2017, which was found to be impractical and unconstitutional. And even the Inter-American Court said it was unenforceable. What this government is doing, as I said, a Fujimorism loan government, was to give credit to this amnesty. And for this, the Constitutional Court, whose members were elected by Fujimorism, came into action. Therefore, we are witnessing legal or seemingly legal clauses that can give a legal appearance to this amnesty, an amnesty that is illegal and illegitimate in all respects. Therefore, the political will and political discussion of Dina Boluarte has made this possible. And what we see at the end of the survival agreement, in which Dina Boluarte is dependent on Fujimorism, and Fujimorism has kept her in power because it does not want new elections to be held.
La mantiene porque no quiere que se abran nuevas elecciones.
We are in a disastrous draw. We take a short break and continue immediately.
Estamos de regreso en Negro y Blanco con Anaí Durán y
we're back with Black and White with Anaí Durán. Let's move on to the next question. Look, what is happening to the popular democratic and patriotic forces of Peru? Considering these conditions of ideological, political, economic, and repression unity that you mentioned in 80 years so far, new prisoners and the maximum limitation of public freedoms, in this situation, what happens to these forces and what is their reaction and capacity?
¿Qué reacción tienen? ¿Qué capacidad?
Bueno, lamentablemente, la crisis política.
Unfortunately, the political crisis in Peru is very deep, and there is no coherent political opposition forces. Dina Boluarte does not face opposition in Congress. Both right-wing and left-wing parties that are in Congress, such as Free Peru and other dissident parties, have about 4 to 5 seats. They have no opposition because they don't want to leave. The issue is that if Dina Boluarte resigns or is removed from office in Peru, new elections must be held and both Congress and the government must step aside and allow the electoral process to proceed. These congressmen and these political groups don't want that. And unfortunately, that's what deepens the crisis of representation, because what they're doing is self-preservation, and the citizens are vehemently against them. The performance of the Congress is faced with 96% dissatisfaction. And similarly, the dissatisfaction with the performance of the executive branch is 92%. We are in a crisis of representation and political crises in which citizens are not important for these groups, and they remain alive in this agreement as long as they can. So where is it left for the citizens? All that remains are the streets. Because of this, we have seen demonstrations. Demonstrations were held separately. And those who came to the streets were rural, noble communities, and those who voted for Pedro Castillo, for example, the Andean community, or workers in forest sector. Demonstrations related to poverty-stricken and damaged groups were brutally suppressed. Not only 80 people were killed, but 1,200 people were injured. 1,800 people were tried, and some of those demonstrators are still in prison. The dramatic situation that exists is due to the existence of an illegitimate government, which, by clashing with the coup plotters, has brought about the illegal and illegitimate removal of Pedro Castillo. And they do not want to allow the will of the people to decide their own fate. So what we're witnessing is the increasing decline of democracy. They are advancing in the Congress and in the government, and they are in the National Council of Justice, and they have made the judiciary opaque. They want to do the same with the National Electoral Council. So it seems that we cannot have an election contest in the short term. That is why the situation in Peru is very sad and very bad. We have to see if there are forces from more active classes during this year or the next year that can create synergies and play a role in politics.
Algún protagonismo político, ¿no?
Sí, y mira, eso.
What do you think about this? Because the whole world is changing. On the one hand, you see the clear decline of Western Europe and America, and the fall of American imperialism is clear, at least on the economic and political level. From a military point of view, it is still one of the first and perhaps the largest military powers in the world. It is clear that it is against many nations that are fighting for their freedom. But in Latin America, we see a tendency towards rightism and even extreme rightism of the terrorist type, with some of the characteristics of brutal dictatorships like Pinochet in Chile. For example, we have Milei in Argentina, Noboaro in Ecuador. Dina Boluarte is forming a dictatorship, and releasing Fujimori is a very clear signal about her direction. What's your idea?
De Fujimori dando una señal clarita, ¿cuál es su camino?
He was put there by the authoritarian and far-right coalition. A number of her main political supporters went to Milei's inauguration. Yes, I think she's part of this destructive phenomenon. But she herself? No. Dina Boluarte is not someone who does not have her own strength. She's been held by a coalition of coup plotters and mafia. Because I think that in Peruvian politics, the ability to form allegiances and exchange favors, negotiate and even exchange money to buy government institutions and remain in power is one of the necessities. Therefore, this coup coalition that ousted Castillo is a mafia, because it bought the institutions of the government. And it's this coalition that kept Dina Boluarte in the government and imposed the regime that is aligned with the extreme right sections that you mentioned. For example, Milei in Argentina and the issue of Ecuador. But she faces a very broad limitation, which is the lack of radical legitimacy. There is widespread opposition to her from the citizens, as well as the inadequacy of the regime, which has no success to show for it. And the security of the citizens is in a very disastrous situation. I think this is the worst citizen security crisis Peru has ever faced, especially in big cities like Lima and Trujillo. And I mentioned about the economy. The macroeconomics that Peruvian neoliberals were so proud of is in one of its worst conditions, if not the worst in a decade. So I think that in Latin America, the extreme right is taking advantage of the increasing problems that progressive governments are not solving. And in the case of Peru, as I mentioned, there is alignment, but there are certain conditions where the government has no legitimacy and no success to show.
De no tener legitimidad y además de no tener ningún éxito que mostrar, ¿no?
Pero de cualquier manera, siendo verdad eso, vivimos también un momento.
This is a fact, but in any case, we live in a time when it seems that democracy and public freedom and people's rights do not matter to the big and very big imperialist powers.
Pública y los derechos de la gente, no, porque estamos en un momento del látigo.
Well, we're coming to the end. Please give your closing remarks on this program and the vision you see for Peru today.
Y la perspectiva que tú ves hoy día sobre Perú.
Sí, para terminar, creo que hay que reforzar.
Yes, in conclusion, I think that Peru's position in regional geopolitical equations should be strengthened. The American embassy was very active during the time of Pedro Castillo. I hope that in the future it will be clear that American Ambassador Lisa Kenna did a lot of things to set up the removal and coup against Castillo. I think that in this emerging multipolar world, Peru remains a bastion of American imperialism. In the end, I believe it is important to note that the international community's indifference to the events in Peru has been very high. Today, I take this opportunity to draw your attention to Peru. 1 year has passed since the beginning of the killings by the Dina Boluarte regime. In Juliaca, in Ayacucho, in the city of Juliaca, 18 people were shot dead by the police in just 1 day. In Ayacucho, 10 people were killed. And this issue was not condemned by anywhere, neither the Organization of American States nor the international community. We're still in a state of emergency, and our civil rights are still being curtailed. On the other hand, there is a call of solidarity from nations and some respectable governments. There are still governments, for example, Mexico, which behaved very respectfully, as well as Colombia and the countries of ALBA, to protest and condemn what is happening in Peru. We don't live in a normal democracy or anything like that. Therefore, the outlook is that this situation will intensify if there is no reaction to condemn these conditions and stand in solidarity with the Peruvian nation. And I use this opportunity to call for solidarity and draw attention. And I hope that you will be able to closely follow the developments that will take place in Peru in the coming months.
Así es, Anavi. Hay que...
That's right, Anai. Undoubtedly, we should consider this as a continental solidarity mission.
Porque la experiencia que vivió el pueblo peruano, ¿no? Con Fujimori.
Because the experience that the Peruvian nation had with Fujimori is being repeated with Dina Boluarte today.
Observamos aquello. Vemos nuevamente lo que pasó en 1992, en el fondo...
We are seeing it here in Chile. We must remember what happened in 1992. A legal appearance that is not legal.
Y como se llama, muy regado de represión de una política.
Events intertwine with repression and politics that do not benefit the people, and on the contrary, destroy rights, and at the international level, clearly aligned with American imperialism and notorious groups at the global level. This is what you have brought up. So I thank you for your presence and I wish the best for the people of Peru. And I also demand the freedom of President Pedro Castillo.
Para la exigencia de libertad para el presidente Pedro Castillo.
Thank you. We will continue this fight. Thanks.
Keep up the good work. Thank you very much.
In the limelight.
Washington is in control. Washington wants the Israeli regime's genocide against Palestinians to continue. It just wants to pretend that it is aiding Palestinians while it helps the Zionist regime murder them. Washington clearly sees the airdrops as means to do that. We have taken a look at some of the world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay with us. The Electronic Intifada has covered this story and tells us more. What is being marketed as benevolent assistance amounts to humanitarian aid theater that does nothing to end the systematic and intentional campaign of starvation the Israeli regime and its American and European allies, with the complicity of regional regimes, are waging against Palestinians. Experts and aid officials have made clear that these airdrops are not an effective way to alleviate the starvation of 2.3 million people in Gaza, deliberately caused by the Israeli regime with the full backing of the United States. By participating in these airdrops, Egypt and the United Arab Emirates, but especially Jordan, whose air force is carrying them out, are providing public relations cover for countries directly involved in the Zionist regime's genocide of Palestinians in Gaza. The effect, whether intentional or not, is to relieve the Israeli regime and its backers of pressure to lift the total siege that Tel Aviv has imposed on the coastal enclave, with the clear intention of causing maximum suffering and death to as many people as possible. Right now, children in Gaza are being starved at the fastest rate the world has ever seen, said Melanie Ward, the chief executive officer of the charity Medical Aid for Palestinians. It's very simple. It's because